How much to the Buddha? How much to the Dharma? How much to the Sangha? So today's talk is a continuation of last week, where I talked about four different kinds of meditation and tried to make it explicit that I think it's fine if you do multiple different kinds of meditation, that the emphasis that I have been giving to shikantaza, which is just sitting, themeless, kind of the method of no method meditation, that despite my emphasis on that and Soto Zen's emphasis on that, it would not mean to be exclusive of other forms of meditation. But just to briefly recap, what is meditation? That's kind of an open question in and of itself. But I presented the findings of psychological research where the effects of meditation, it's like a relaxation response, the opposite of the stress response, and that it's evoked by deliberately choosing some kind of meditative object or technique and just kind of, I guess, returning the mind to that repeatedly, and then having a passive attitude, or a, you're not really trying to achieve anything with this or evaluate how you're doing. It's just a very simple returning. So there's many activities, for example, that we might find are kind of relaxing, you know, a hike or listening to music or something like that. But what would make it meditative is to be continually just kind of returning your attention, your awareness to the music or to the sensations of walking, or, you know, really kind of simplifying the mind and turning it toward a particular approach or object. And then in my Idiot's Guide to Meditation, I defined it as it involves a conscious direction of your mind for a period of time in order to affect the mind itself. So we're not, you know, problem solving in a way that we might in other settings. And there's many different kinds of meditation. It's difficult to communicate. You know, we can't see inside each other's minds. Are you doing what I'm doing? Do you understand my, you know? So kind of trying to define or describe or teach meditation is a difficult thing, actually. And to draw the line between different types. I mean, so don't be surprised, even though I'm going to talk about these different types of meditation, that, you know, if you look really closely, if the boundaries start to get unclear, and, you know, there's kind of just the nature of this. But for what's, you know, for the use that it might, usefulness it might provide, I was thinking about these different types of meditation. So last week I talked about centering meditation, and I called it calming, but Shintai, we were talking afterwards, and she suggested for her it's more like centering, and I like that. It's where you choose a very simple meditative object, you know, frequently just in the body, the breath or a body scan, or, you know, the sounds that you perceive, or, you know, something very simple. And in other traditions it might be a sound or a syllable or something like that, but that you're just returning the mind to that object over and over. And it's, so I mean, it may have a calming effect, but it's almost more about centering ourselves in our present experience. So maybe we feel calm and maybe we don't, but it's a centering kind of experience. So I like that word. And the benefit of that in particular is like the interruption of compulsive thoughts and perseverating, or our default mode, you know, that our minds work in particular ways, and this kind of centering meditation just helps break that that pattern. And so I took us through a guided body scan last week. Then the second type that I'm conceiving of here, it's cultivating. That is positive states of mind or qualities. So we know that the meditation can have an effect on us, and sometimes we can choose something positive that we want to cultivate. So we go through a certain kind of mental exercise or technique or repetition of a chant or something like that in order to encourage ourselves to have a certain kind of attitude. So an example of this is loving kindness meditation, which I led us through last week, of calling someone to mind and then, you know, may you be free from fear and anxiety, may you be at ease, may you be happy, and really trying to summon those genuine feelings, you know, doing that for someone for whom it's easy to feel that, and then trying to extend that sense of goodwill to others. And I don't know if you've ever tried it, but, you know, ideally you end up doing this for someone for with whom you have difficulty. That's where the really transformative aspect of it is, where you have some resentment, and then, but you really try to extend this metta, and it can really soften our attitudes towards someone. It can really soften our resentments and free us up from that. So that's an example. Cultivating gratitude. Vajrayana Buddhism has many visualizations that are meant to cultivate certain attitudes or qualities. The five contemplations: I am of the nature to grow old, I am of the nature to, you know, become sick, I am the nature to die, to kind of light a fire under our practice, remind us of impermanence, to motivate us. That's another kind of, you know, of cultivating a quality. And so last week I took us to the loving kindness meditation. And then the third kind that I talked about was insight meditation, or you're investigating. It's a deliberate, directed effort. So with the kind of stillness of mind and body that we've cultivated in meditation, then we turn our attention toward some question, some topic, some object, whether it's kind of karmic and personal, like what's going on with me, why am I so upset right now, or something like that, or maybe something a little more, you know, dharmic. You know, what is my sense of self? Does my sense of self have boundaries? That's kind of the guided meditation I led us through last week. And this is the kind of meditation that Shakyamuni Buddha did on the, you know, eve of his enlightenment, according to the story. So with his mind concentrated and still and bright, he directed it to the question that had been central to him, which is, you know, what is the nature of human suffering, and is there anything that we can do about it? So he really, you know, examined, like, you know, what leads to suffering, and is there anything we can do about that? And then he had the insight into essentially the Four Noble Truths, that this kind of dissatisfactoriness is part of our human condition. And it arises from our wanting to things to be other than how they are, and that it's possible to give up that desire for things to be other than how they are, and thereby relieve that suffering. So in the Pali Canon, in original Buddhism, and this is in Theravada and Vipassana Buddhism, they really talk about the mindfulness, the four foundations of mindfulness. So there's mindfulness of the body, which many of us are familiar with, like that kind of mindfulness, and mindfulness of, but it, you know, they go into great detail, like mindfulness of your posture, and it's not just limited to the cushion either, a mindfulness when you are walking, a mindfulness when you're you know, being aware when you're laying down that you're laying down, and that you're, you know, all being really cultivating awareness of your body. And mindfulness is the faculty of remembering what you want to be paying attention to, and kind of keeping your mind on it. So I like to think of it as like, you know, if you're looking through binoculars, mindfulness is your ability to be like, oh, right, I wanted to look at that. And, oh, right, I want to, you know. So it's that bringing it back and holding it on what it is that you're trying to investigate. So you, in classic Buddhism, your mindfulness of the body begin with, and there's mindfulness of the feelings. And how does a monk remain focused on feelings in and of themselves? This is a case where a monk or a practitioner, when feeling a painful feeling, so feelings in Buddhism are painful, pleasant, and neutral, or kind of like, dislike, and, you know, indifference. So they're not complicated emotions. There's the case where the monk, when feeling a painful feeling, discerns, I am feeling a painful feeling. When feeling a pleasant feeling, he discerns, I am feeling a pleasant feeling. When feeling neither painful nor pleasant feeling, he discerns, I am feeling neither painful nor pleasant feeling. So there's no like additional judgment or effort to change it or anything. It's just building this awareness of what's going on. But then as you do that, of course, you notice, oh, these feelings arise and pass. If I don't necessarily act on a feeling right away, it tends to change anyway. So that you're learning things in the process of paying attention. Then you focus on the mind in and of itself. And when you're in this terms of this this mindfulness of, a lot of times people are you know, like, so what are we supposed to be doing? You know, if I'm going to be investigating something, how do I go about that without employing the discriminating mind and just kind of analyzing and thinking about it? This is a kind of an observation. So if it's like, if you were listening closely to music and noticed something in its rhythm, this would be a direct observation of you made through listening. Not an idea that you're formulating about the music. You know, you don't go off into abstraction about, you know, I think music, and maybe you do, but the mindfulness is just really noticing exactly what is happening. It's direct awareness of what's happened. And it doesn't exclude the mind. I mean, just as you were listening to music, you would know, is it loud? Is it quiet? Did it just change? You could notice quite a few things about it, or maybe even say, oh, that's kind of like that other kind of music. Or, I mean, you might make connections, but just really through that observation. So I think of this kind of like, I mean, you're kind of like a scientist, maybe, just observing what's happening. So then we come focused on the mind in and of itself. We notice the mind has passion. When the mind is without passion, we discern the mind is without passion or greed, or we notice when the mind has aversion, or when the mind is without aversion, or when the mind has delusion, or the mind is without delusion. And then there's other states of mind, when the mind is constricted, enlarged, surpassed, concentrated, and released. So in the traditional, in this Pali Canon Sutra on this, all of these have different meanings. They're different states of mind that we become familiar with. And then, once we've really gotten very familiar with and intimate with our own being and process, we turn that lens of mindfulness, that lens of this insight meditation, onto what they call mental qualities, but really these are, I don't know, I would say they're aspects of the Dharma. I think they're called mental qualities because they are our actual internal experience of the Dharma. So that is the five hindrances: sensual desire, ill will, sloth, restlessness, and doubt. So the presence and absence of that within us and what the effects of those are. The ephemeral not-self nature of the five aggregates: form, sensation, perception, formation, and consciousness. Turning the lens of mindfulness on that and seeing how those are not self or not personal. So this is the four foundations of mindfulness list. This is what you should be working on. Presence or absence of the seven factors of awakening, another list, and the Four Noble Truths. The presence of dukkha, suffering, seeing what causes it to arise, recognizing how it can end, and the path of practice that allows you to do that. So this is the classic insight meditation includes meditative exploration of all of these things in this very direct way of observation. So before I get on to how all these different kinds of meditation relate, I never really got to Shikantaza, the type of meditation we do last week, which, I don't know, words keep shifting. I mean, I've called this letting go meditation in the sense that that's one of the primary things that we're about sitting there. But in the context of these other descriptions, I'm almost thinking like this is being. This meditation is about being as opposed to even necessarily centering or cultivating or insights being. So in this we let go of all willful effort except for sitting upright and still, and yet we pay close attention as if this was the last hour of our life. So there's a very interesting tension there where it's like you're letting go of trying to achieve anything, affect your meditation experience, anything. And yet, you're trying to be alert and present and paying attention. Because usually, when we give up trying to get anything, or hope for anything, or control anything, we just go, just check out. We zone out and check out, and we lose energy because, we're not getting anything out of this. But now we're being asked to have that kind of energy and attention and care, even though we're letting go of trying to make anything happen. So, and everything is included in this. I think of it as like, sit still and upright and see what happens. And anything that happens is included. Pain, boredom, resistance, thinking, judging ourselves for thinking, it's all part of it. So take you through very brief, we don't usually do this with a guided meditation, but I'll take you through a little guided Shikantaza meditation. Go ahead and close your eyes if you want to. So let's become aware of the here and now. And this is very easy to do. We tend to overthink it, but it's not a special skill. If we're wondering whether we're aware of the here and now, we've added something. It's completely natural. We knew how to do this when we were a child. Little child, just sitting there in the sun. Become aware of your body. Upright and still. Let your mind be open and perceptive, but without agenda. Like a movie screen. It's just going to be a background for whatever moves through this moment. Sounds, sensations, warmth, thoughts, light, dark. This is the ultimate rest. Putting aside everything you're concerned about in the rest of your life. All of your responsibilities just for these few moments. The only thing you have to do is sit upright. Stay very still and just see what happens. What if this was your last day? This was the last time you were ever going to meditate. Appreciate just being alive. Breathing, feeling your hands, to what extent are you dismissing this current simple experience because it's boring or unimportant, or you think you know what's going to happen next? Remind yourself that you've never experienced this moment before, and you'll never experience it again. Each time you notice your mind has wandered off, you're already back in the present moment. The present moment includes everything. Notice any resistance to just being useless. So, as I said last week, you might incorporate into, you know, if you've set aside a certain amount of meditation in your life for a period of time, you might want to spend some of it at the beginning, maybe on a deliberately centering practice just to kind of, you know, get out of the habitual busy mind and just, you know, center yourself. Maybe in the course of meditation, you notice something come up. You notice a difficult feeling. And then you might set shikantaza aside for a moment and then kind of use the stillness and turn toward, you know, what's going on with that? What's coming up for me? And maybe there'd be some insight into there that would be helpful. So my book on meditation has many different suggestions for meditation. There's many guided meditations online that do these various things, either cultivating or exploring. Jean Rue just pointed out to me, some of you are familiar with Radical Acceptance. And Tara Brach has, she's a Vipassana teacher, and she's has many different exercises in here that are very interesting about exploring your own heart and mind, and so kind of more of that insight and cultivation, you know, doing something kind of deliberate with the meditation. Now, why in Soto Zen do we just teach shikantaza? Sometimes we might tell you to like follow your breath for a while or count your breath, but then we say just let that go and just do shikantaza. So why, if there's, you know, so much to be gained and learned by all these different kinds of meditation, why don't we teach them all? That's a very good question. And after last week's talk, Shintai and I were talking a little bit, and I just love it because we enjoy listening to other teachers' talks. Because I'm like, that's an interesting way to put it. You know, and you kind of think like, I would have put it like this. So, do you want to just kind of share what like?
Sure. And you can prompt me if I forget our conversation from last week. But it was interesting to hear Domyo's kind of distinguishing these different ways of describing meditation and sort of making space for you might want to deliberately engage these practices. And I thought, oh, that's so interesting, because the way I think of shikantaza, so we're in Soto Zen, it's like just sit. And my practice with it is engaging the koan of what interferes with my ability to just sit. Why can't I do shikantaza in this moment? And that also connects with how we work with koans, and the way we phrase it is the koan arises naturally in daily life, but the koan also arises specifically in zazen. For me, this is kind of how it's worked, is so I'm sitting down with this intention to be relaxed and upright and present in the moment, and then notice what interferes with that. And then these different tools are what I have employed to then come back to my intention to sit shikantaza. And I don't want to go on too long, but I at the beginning when I started training at Dharma Rain, it was shikantaza, just sit. And then and which was challenging, I could go on and on for reasons why that was challenging, it was very challenging. And I got exposed to these other tools through visiting other centers. So it was like, oh, there's a way to deal with my pervasive negative self-talk, right? There's a way for me to address this aversion I have to this other person through meta practice. There's a way to arrive on the cushion by engaging in anchoring practices where I'm able to completely arrive to my intention to sit. And so all of these, it was so interesting to hear last week, these kind of parse out in this very specific way, because for me it's a lot messier than that. It's like sitting down with the intention of sitting, of doing shikantaza, and then noticing what interferes with that effort. And then this is the benefit of practicing every day, is you notice these things and, oh, it's that that's interfering. Oh, it's that that's interfering. Oh, it's that. And it can be these same things. And then you start to kind of look for tools that are going to help engage that in a way that transforms it, that gives you some insight that then also translates to opposition. Does that kind of capture what some of what we talked about last week? So it's a lot messier than like, oh, I'm going to engage this. It kind of naturally arises from this intention to sit and noticing what interferes with that, with a lot of just curiosity and openness about, oh, this, I keep replaying the same conversation with somebody. Oh, what's going on there? Oh, okay. And I'll just put a plug in for A Path Apart by Jack Kornfield, because I was thinking about a conversation throughout the week, and I remember early on in practice being pointed to that book, A Path Apart, because it's almost like you look at the table of contents, it gives you like, gives you kind of a list of things that are interfering with your shikantaza and some suggestions about more specific directive practices to address them, which I kind of think of myself as like Soto Zen through and through with Vipassana tendencies. So they have been very helpful for me. Very useful tools that get me back to this ability to just sit and be present.
I think, and then when you mentioned that, I was like, oh yeah, I mean, that's definitely been the way it's been for me as well, which, you know, there's a little bit of a tension there. You know, if we taught all these kinds of meditation, then you might be kind of like, all right, well, you know, I don't know, where should I start, and how should I do all kinds? And, you know, like, it could be kind of complicated to just think now you have like four different kinds of meditation you have to juggle. But on the other hand, being exposed to the tools and the possibilities is very helpful as well. So we kind of want to keep it simple and yet communicate some of the tools as well. But for me, similarly, it's just been an organic kind of natural, messy process of just, I love that. It's like, what is getting in the way of just being? And it may sound like a really kind of lifeless, boring, static, passive thing to just sit, upright and not try to control anything, but it's not. It's actually, when we're really doing it, it's a very, very profound, wonderful, relaxing, open, intimate, alive. It's being alive. It's being fully present with ourselves and our lives. So, I mean, shikantaza is like a really high bar. We're sitting there trying to be completely at peace. Just try to be at peace. You know, I mean, and there's all kinds of things that get in the way of that. A lack of acceptance of ourselves and our lives. A fear of emptiness. Fear of loss of self, loss of control. Fear of mortality. Fear of the unknown. Fear of intimacy. Clinging to resentment and anger at self or other. Obsession with external conditional sources of pleasure and affirmation. Desire for some kind of awakening experience, some kind of insight that will make it all better, some different life, some different experience of life. Unexplored assumptions, we already know what life is all about and what's going to come next. All of these, I mean, there's an infinite number of ways that we're kept just, you know, slightly alienated from our own direct experience. So these other kinds of meditation, you know, you can kind of study them and learn them, and then just in a kind of natural way, whatever tools attract you, whatever tools seem to arise that might be useful, can be spontaneously employed to help us sit more wholeheartedly. So I had this metaphor come to mind. So it's like you're on vacation and you really need to relax. So you just get a big inner tube and you're going to lay across the inner tube and you're just going to like push out from the dock and just drift on this calm lake. Just, you know, let everything go, and you're just gonna. Now, I mean, you might notice like the inner tube is like running low in air, and it's kind of okay. So you're gonna pump up your inner tube. Maybe you notice that you're actually kind of scared to just let yourself drift around, so you're like holding on to the dock. Okay, so maybe you kind of, you know, do you give yourself a little talking to, do some mental exercises to kind of let yourself let go. Maybe the inner tube drift in some weeds. Okay, I mean, you're not trying to make anything happen. On the other hand, sitting here in these weeds is not exactly very relaxing. So, you know, okay, get yourself out of the weeds. So we might do these kinds of, you know, take these kinds of measures, but it's in order to be able to relax, in order to be able to let go. And if we find ourselves, you know, going to town to get a different inner tube that would be better, or waiting for the ideal conditions on the lake, or, you know, I mean, you find yourself kind of messing about too much so that this is going to be a really relaxing experience, you know, at some point, you just got to kind of get on the inner tube and do your best and relax. And it's also, if you think about this metaphor, it's like, there's never a point at which you're just like, okay, got it. You know, that's good. I'm relaxed. I mean, it never ends. It's a process. You can lay out there and get tense again, and then, you know, need to relax. It's like it's an elusive goal, if you will, but it also makes sense in terms of our heart. So, just a few minutes left. Anybody have any questions?
This might be splitting hairs, but I'd like to hear a comparison between insight meditation and doing inquiry.
I think they're the same. I mean, maybe, I don't know, insight meditation is like, I kind of think of that, might be kind of like an official word, you know, like Vipassana or Theravada, and they have their own ways of going about it, and yet obviously Jack Kornfield and Tara Brach, you know, they just make stuff up. So I think there's that classic investigation of the four foundations of mindfulness. So there's a kind of traditional way of doing this, but really I think that whole attitude of just turning that lens of awareness onto a subject. With a questioning attitude.
Trying to figure out how to turn this into a question. I notice when I sit down that I rarely, if ever, seem to have any control over what kind of sitting is going to happen. So for me, when I sit down in Shikantaza and make space for whatever's going to happen. Sometimes what happens is shamatha, and sometimes what happens is vipassana. I seem to naturally drift between them. Sometimes when I sit down, I lock off my heartbeat or the traffic or the sound of the air conditioners. And sometimes there's a teaching I can't get out of my head that I have to pick at, or a feeling I have to pick at. So for me, calming and insight are inside of shikantaza. So it's strange to me a little bit to hear them decomposed into different categories. Am I missing something?
I don't know. I mean, it just occurs to me that for me there is always an overarching aim to let go into being as just completely and utterly as possible. When we do that, our whole sense of self dissolves. So I similarly don't, you know, have very limited control over what actually happens. We'll see, but I don't know. There's kind of this, it's maybe it's kind of like keeping my eye on a koan or something. Where it does feel to me, and should tell you, answer this as well, like when I decide, all right, I really need to center a little bit, or I, you know, I need to look at that, it does feel like I am, I mean, it's all in the service of that larger koan, but does feel like just, it just feels like turning it away from it for a moment, because in that complete stillness of sitting, nothing needs to be fixed and nothing needs to be figured out. So, it's all kind of defies description, but do you have anything to add?
Yeah, but I kind of resonate with what you're saying, because I think that's how I reacted last week. It's like, oh, it feels funny to kind of parse it out in these categories, but also echo what Domio just said in that I employ those tools with this intention to be able to just sit. So those tools are, like you just exactly how you said, in service of being able to just be. And then there are those moments where all the divisions fall away, self and other, boundary between me and sound and whatever I'm experiencing are dissolved. So it's in service of that expanded no self that we touch at times. But yeah, so it's all kind of in the pot, you know. And then there's times when I'm really deeply engaging one of those really pretty specifically, but it's all so I can just be.
No, nothing needs to be fixed, but it might be better if we did fix it.
Just like you know, Shinryu Suzuki said, you know, you're perfect just as you are and you could use a little improvement. Because it's like that is the irony. Like, I love the image of Isho Fujita, my favorite Zazen teacher, where he says, you know, our practice, Zazen, I mean, Dogen even said, Zazen is not meditation practice. Zazen is being. Zazen is relaxing into being. Zazen is something we allow, not something that we do. But he said, it's kind of like, you know, and we all do this, like, say you go to the massage therapist, and they're like, ooh, you know, your shoulders are really tense. You should relax them. It's like, okay. I mean, it's just, this is the habit. This is how we are. We don't even know how to go about relaxing. I mean, we don't have to do anything. We have to undo, you know? So even though nothing needs to be done, it's not easy. We still have to, like, okay, you know, so he said it's like we got a bamboo stick, and this is how we're usually holding it. And they're like, all right, you know, just relax it. But, you know, do we know how to do that? There's so many reasons that we're holding on like this, that we actually do need to explore that so that we can let go. Anything else?
Sounds like an act of faith on a subconscious level.
I mean, this touches this, that simple act of trying to just be. I don't feel like I've ever completely let go. Ever. I mean, sometimes more than others, and you know, you learn and you kind of push your own boundary, but I mean, that's a scary thing. To really, you know, they said, put your bones and your flesh into this position and leave it all to that. I don't want to leave it all to that, you know. It's a. I mean, there's primal fears in there, you know. There's like it's so it brings up all of that, which is good. but it's not an easy thing to do.
Yeah. It feels like placing yourself in personal intimacy, you know, just sitting, it's just intimacy with yourself. And that sometimes that's really a scary thing.
I mean, you end up really having to face yourself. This is why most of the people in our society, you could not get them to sit 5 minutes alone facing a wall in silence. No, thank you. Like, you couldn't probably pay them enough to do that. It would be torture. You know, so just so give yourself some credit. You know, you may think like, well, I haven't, you know, don't really have the hang of this, but even just do as much as we're doing takes a lot of facing yourself and facing what's going on. And I mean, when I first started practice 25 years ago, I mean, my lack of acceptance of myself, my determination to change myself was just, you know, that was probably the biggest, you know, just, I couldn't just let go, not like this, not with this person. And that's not, you're talking about, you know, later on when I fix myself, then I'm going to let go. So it really requires that. I mean, my biggest kind of shift in terms of, so that's so similarly for me, like all the rest of the of practice, all the karma work, the relationships, the precepts, like all working on all of that has made my shikantaza more deep and still. So this karmic thing gets let go of, and then I can sit more still. And the biggest, like, transformative shift for me have been these moments of, like, complete, or maybe not complete, but more self-acceptance, more of a, like, an embrace of, like, I'm part of the human race. I'm probably never going to get any better than this. And it's okay. If it's okay for that person, it's okay for me. And this kind of ease that then my shikantaza more still. So I'll leave it at that. Thank you all for coming. Oh, and I'll do the formal end. So please remain, you're going to the bell, sorry. Abiding in this ephemeral world like a lotus in muddy water, the mind is pure and goes beyond. Thus we bow to Buddha. All Buddhas throughout space and time, all higher ones, bodhisattvas, mahasattvas, wisdom beyond wisdom, maha, prajna, paramita.